It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go. Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand.
The Seminole Hard Rock. Oh, World Poker Tour. It's on TV somewhere. Might not be a Sportsnet show. I don't know. Better not mention it. I've been there. What? Oh, the remote. What am I going to do with this? Change the channel?
Maybe.
Or just find out what channel it is. Hang on.
How about finding your channel?
Hang on.
You turned it off.
No, I didn't. It's just slow. How come everything Rogers is so slow in the Rogers building? Do you have an answer to that question?
No, not touching that one.
But it is, though, isn't it?
Yes.
I don't. It boggles my mind. The internet's slow. TV channels change slow. Like, this should be super speed here.
Big pipe.
I love getting the call from Rogers. I got a call from Rogers today as I was on my way out the door.
Oh, yes.
And guy's telling me, like, I've got the super duper hyper imaginative, can't get any more than this internet package with Rogers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because my kids, the ones that are still at home, consume internet space like wild banshees.
So unlimited and lots.
Yeah, I have unlimited and they go over.
To infinity and beyond.
So a guy calls me today, you know, and he's some guy from somewhere in the world. I don't even know where he is. He might be in this building for all I know, but he has no idea who I am. And he says,
Or over the bridge.
We notice that, you know, your internet usage is pretty high. Can we see if we can help you with that? And I said, no.
Well, what if he wanted to give you a better deal?
That's not what he said. He said the usage is high.
No.
Can we help you with that? And I said, well, if you want to come over to the house and whack the kids around and tell them to get off the internet, yes.
But if you have unlimited, what does it mean?
But I don't think that's what...
If you have unlimited, what does
that's my point.
Oh, okay. Did you ask him that?
No, I was running out the door.
Oh.
I went to look at the house.
I bet you're really polite to all those telephone solicitations you get.
I usually look at it and I go, I'm not answering that.
Yeah.
The problem is these guys called back. This was the third time the guy had called in the last 2 days. And I'd ignored the first two calls, and I thought, oh, I better take it. Maybe it's not what I think it is. And it's exactly what I thought it was. They're just trying to sell me something.
Wow.
We have a...
On the phone. What a novel idea.
No kidding. We have a delightful show today. Richard Deitch will join us.
We said that yesterday, too.
Oh, yeah, then Lanny.
Then it got off to a rocky start.
I see Lanny McDonald's not on.
Would you like him on? We can get him on.
I don't know. No, he's not in the black book yet. Yet.
He won't be in the black book. It's Lanny McDonald. Come on now. He's an icon.
Yeah, but he was miserable yesterday. He was uncooperative. He clearly doesn't like me.
Well, that's obvious.
And it was established.
And clearly he liked me.
Oh, yeah, he likes you a lot. That's because you're a hockey guy and I'm not. He spent his entire career getting softball questions thrown at him by hockey people, which is what hockey people do. And, you know, the minute anybody asks him anything that has any level of controversy, he just snaps.
Okay, so I have a question here, a timely, important, pertinent question.
We'll see.
One of your favorite general managers in town, and he's not on the lineup.
Who that?
Dale Tallon.
Oh, yeah?
Dale Tallon's in town.
Why is he in town? Are they playing the Leafs?
Tonight.
Oh. 17,412 will be there.
Yeah. Actually, I was talking to somebody who works for another team, and they said,
or less.
We heard about the terrible situation in Toronto. Attendance is down. I said, yeah, that means they make $80 million as opposed to $100 million.
Oh, I don't think so. I think they make $99.99 well, million instead of $100 million.
You get my point.
I do. Richard Deitch will join us. Scotty Bowman will join us.
William Scott Bowman. Wow.
That's pretty while cool. You're here.
Excellent.
John Gibbons, the Blue Jays manager.
Are you going to ask him why he's so unhappy about sending Delabar down? I think he's not very happy about this.
Why would he be unhappy, do you think?
I think he likes Delabar.
So isn't he the manager?
Well, that's the question you have to ask him. Ask for transparency in baseball.
Hey, Lanny. All right.
Who else, Bob?
Grievous Vasquez will join us in studio.
Really? Will he help you with your jump shot?
I don't think so. Don't have a jump shot.
What do you have?
Two-handed set shot. I don't see why jumping should be necessary.
How did you shoot free throws, Rick Barry? You did? You did not. You did not.
Always.
No way. No. Only Rick
I did
Barry.
For a while.
Only Rick Barry did.
No, I went through a shooting slump. It's sort of like...
What, the 60s?
Yeah. It was it was in the 60s when I was a
no,
kid.
No, no. The whole 60s.
Yeah. It's sort of like my putting woes. So now I have 30 putters and God knows different grips and I face the hole. I close my eyes. I mean, everything. I've tried everything. Can't get it in the hole. And I went through a prolonged shooting slump, and so I tried the underhanded free throws, and that didn't last that long.
Did you hit the hoop with them?
Well, yes, sometimes, but it wasn't much better.
Oh.
And then
he was remarkable, Rick Barry.
And then I discovered how to do it.
Anybody under 30, okay. You should Google him and watch him shoot free throws. He really was unbelievable.
When I lived in Vegas, mm-hmm. I had a basketball court.
Yeah.
Well, like half, yeah. You know, like yeah. And I didn't put it up. It was there.
Right.
When I got the house. And I would spend hours out there shooting baskets. It had been like 25 years since I'd done it. No, not that long. 15 years since I'd done it. It's mesmerizingly enjoyable.
Oh, I agree.
Don't you agree?
I still have a hoop in my driveway.
Do you really?
Oh, yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
I still love playing the game.
Yeah, it's mesmerizing. Anyway, Grievous Vasquez will join us in studio. Then Masai Ujiri, the managing general of the Toronto Raptors.
You think he's getting worried?
I am. I would hope he's getting worried.
Hmm. But what to play for? What
Maddie's got the basketball out now.
What
now
to play for though? What are the Raptors playing for now?
Well, I think they'd like to finish third. Oh, I think they'd like to finish second, but that's not happening.
I'd like to be president of the United States, too, but that's not going to happen either. I mean,
no, you're a Canadian citizen. You can't be president of the United States.
What? Ted Cruz was born in Canada. He wants to be the president.
I'm sorry?
The one Republican that has put his name forward already for the 2016...
Was born in Canada.
Was born in Alberta, yeah. But he's American.
He's a Republican, too.
Yeah. Bob.
No. No.
Listen,
America,
I'm being objective.
Will not.
I'm being
I don't
objective.
Care about the Bible Belt. I don't care. You can't put another Republican in there. They're a bunch of dinks. I'm sorry. This is not a political show, especially not American politics. And I should be a Republican.
I'm a Democrat. You should be a Republican.
But I'm a Democrat.
I know. I'm a real Democrat. You're a Republican.
No, I'm not a Republican. I hate the Republican Party. I hate what they stand for. I hate the people that are in there. I hate Fox with a passion. I won't watch Fox.
Well, you will watch Fox.
No,
when
I will not.
When the Super Bowl's on Fox, you'll watch Fox.
Well, that's sports.
Oh.
I won't watch any other Fox stuff.
And yet, like Fox, their news network is just destroying CNN. Destroying it ratings-wise.
Well, because CNN is impartial.
Well, some would argue CNN's a little...
The Bible Belt loves Fox.
Actually, our next guest could probably give us a better dissertation of that.
Problem. Well, maybe we'll talk about. We've come up with a topic for Richard Deitch.
He always is good at topics.
And then Colby Armstrong will join us in studio.
When?
What do you mean when? 6:35.
Oh, I'm not here.
Eastern time. The last segment of the show. He must be doing something on.
Yeah, he's Colby and I. We've been working a few nights together.
How's he doing? Okay.
Yeah, he's doing great.
I know last time he was here, he was very excited about being in the media, about the opportunity.
Again, I'd like to be president of the United States, but it takes a little more than that. You have to actually work at it, and I think Colby's starting to learn that you have to work at it, and he's doing a good job of that.
Oh, okay. That's kind of a backhanded compliment.
Well, no. It's the same discussion. I've been around athletes who, at near the end of their career, thinks, well, I'll become an announcer. I'll be a broadcaster. It's not that simple. You can't...
Yeah, it is pretty much.
No, it's not, Bob.
If you got any brains at all, this is not a hard thing to do. The problem is there's too many dumb people in the world. That's the problem. Most of them are Republicans, by the way.
And the farther you get away from your playing career as an athlete, the more difficult it becomes. And then you have to create a work ethic in order to talk to people and have an opinion. And that's the other thing. Athletes, as you well know, because you don't have them on this show, rarely...
Well, I may give up on former athletes after McDonald yesterday.
Well, except...
I give up on
well,
guys who are
Lanny,
retired.
Lanny at least had an opinion.
No, he didn't.
Sure he did.
He doesn't have an opinion. He has somebody else's opinion.
He said he was right and you were wrong. But athletes have to learn how to have opinions too, and that's something that you have to almost recondition them from being an athlete, where they say 110% backs against the wall, there's no tomorrow. Which they do. Pucks in deep.
Do you think an athlete makes a better commentator than a former athlete makes a better commentator than a non-former athlete?
I think they could. I think
No. Would you, out of, like, just because you got a two-man booth, I don't care what the sport is.
Right.
Are you automatically hiring a former athlete to be the second man in the booth?
No, I'm not.
Okay, cite the case where you didn't.
Well, I mean, I
can
I,
you?
Dick Irvin. Dick Irvin's the best
perfect
color man ever in the history of hockey.
Say no more.
In Canada.
You answered the question. It's okay.
You know what you can do though is this used to be my job. Like scouts go out and go to small arenas and scout.
Right. And you listen to tape and watch shows.
I can tell within 7 minutes
or less
whether it's worth investing any time in somebody.
Right.
And that's the key.
All right, we got to bring our guest on.
Okay.
12 minutes past the hour. Here's our friend Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated. Wait a second. Wait for the music here, man. Deitch, name that tune.
That's just the way it is.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, but that's not the name of the song, is it?
Not exactly. It is, but it isn't. It's a cover.
This is incredible radio, by the way. It's Tupac Changes, right?
Thank you.
Yeah. I think I was thinking Bruce Hornsby. Maybe.
Well, of course. It's it's a cover.
What, the range?
Okay. That's good, though. I like that, by the way. Can
You're
I
welcome.
Answer your, or can I weigh in on what you guys were just talking about?
I don't know what we're talking about, but go ahead.
I will say this, in case people who are listening to me are also watching TV, we have a real horrible fire in New York right now, a 7-alarm fire in the
Village. Oh, my
gosh. Yeah, it's really bad. So if you have any listeners who are native New Yorkers, who are people in New York, they might want to put on CNN just to check it out. It's in the East Village. It's the visuals of this are really bad. I don't cover fire or crime, so I don't really know much more than sort of substance. But apparently, a 7-alarm fire is a mess.
What kind of building? Is it a high rise?
It's an old building. It's like a 14-story like old East Village building that was built like in the 30s or 20s, with businesses below. So, you know, it's the middle of the day. You would think people are in there. There's businesses at the bottom. Clearly, there were probably people in there. But if you see the visuals on CNN, when you see a fire this size in a major city like New York, it's very scary.
I'm assuming they're trying to contain it from spreading.
Yeah, literally, if you see again, you'll see the images. Like, there's literally, it looks like 100 fire trucks and firefighters on this city block. So they're... It looks like they've reduced the fire pretty significantly, but, you know, again, that's clearly only one part of the battle with ash falling and smoke. It's bad. I mean, you sort of just follow on Twitter a little bit. It's got to be one of the bigger fires the city has seen in a long time.
That's
didn't mean to sort of
no, we understand.
But it's pretty ugly thing.
We appreciate the update, and our audience can choose.
Regarding your thing, though, and the Dick Urban example is really good. I'm always one who believes that the de facto hiring of ex-athletes should not be the de facto hiring, but that is, generally speaking, what most people, what most television executives do. They are, they generally will hire an ex-athlete in that sport. What I would say is I think the more complex sports, let's say like football, I think I understand it, and I think it would be hard for a non-football player to be a color person at the highest level. But, you know, I think baseball is a fairly complicated sport, and I would make the argument that Tom Verducci is one of the best color people around now. And he, well, he played in college and high school. He never played professionally. So if you have the right person, it can be done. The one thing I will say, and I'm sure I'm biased about this, I have found that the non-athletes who have gone to color, by and large, are better on the whole than your group of athletes, because there are a lot of athletes who are pretty horrible analysts. But generally speaking, I have not seen someone who's a non-athlete be brutal, because I think they have to be that great to get on the air.
Well, there still have to be. Yeah, I think you're right, Richard. There still has to be skill as a broadcaster.
For sure.
That the athlete has to bring. And the ability to, the ability to speak the English language, the ability to use the Queen's English in our country, are really important. And then the ability to work beyond the three-hour window of the broadcast and do research and be able to tell a simple story. Once upon a time, this happened, they lived happily ever after.
Yeah, the one thing I've always been told by people on television, and you guys would know this on radio as well, you very quickly learn who is not doing research and who is not prepared and who goes on the air sort of just on name only.
Right.
You can get away with that for a while, but you cannot get away with that for the long haul. And at least from what I've seen, for the most part, I think the broadcasters who are now entering the business today understand that they have to tackle and research the job as hard as they prepared for their athletic career. But we still see people who come on the air, and you can tell that they absolutely have not done deep research, and they're trying to fake it, and they can't fake it. I'll give you a great example. Generally speaking, Michael Irvin, who for some reason the NFL Network loves, as an NFL Network analyst during the draft, he's great during the first 15 picks. After that, when you really got to, I mean, you really got to do your studying, he's just basically, generally speaking, faking it. Maybe he knows the receivers. But you can tell. You can tell when guys aren't really going deep and putting in the work. And I think in order to be, in order to have, generally speaking, a long-term career, unless you're so famous that you can trade off your name forever, I think you got to do the work.
Well, either that or you got to have an act. You know, you could make the case that one of the best off the field and into the booth in terms of success was Dandy Don Meredith on the in the early years of Monday Night Football. Now, I don't think Don Meredith did a lot of homework. That wasn't maybe not his role, but he had an act, and the public loved the act.
Do you think, I would argue, I would ask you this, Bob, do you think that act could work in 2015? I know it worked in 1973.
It's worked okay for me. You know,
are you singing on the air? That's all.
No, occasionally. But I mean, you know, I think the answer is I think we're in the entertainment business.
Right.
And I think part of what too many people in sports forget is that very thing, that it isn't always all about sports. It's about entertainment. And it has to include sports, and you can't be a complete idiot and you can't fake it. But if you have the ability to entertain in whatever manner you choose, I think you can be successful. So I guess the answer to your question in a roundabout way is, yeah, I think if there was another Don Meredith out there, he could be successful. And I'm sure there is.
I would say this. I agree with you. I agree you can maintain a job with that kind of ethos and thinking entertainment first, because people like Warren Sapp, Deion Sanders, generally speaking, were trading on their – I mean, I personally didn't think Warren Sapp was an interesting personality, but he was hired sort of purely based on personality, and Deion Sanders is a little bit like that. So I would agree with you. I would say, I guess, when you use your Meredith example, to me, Meredith was on the premier sports show of his time.
Well, of course he was, sure.
I think you can definitely be hired by a sports network because there are so many. Mm-hmm. I do wonder if you could if a Don Meredith – could end up being on, let's say, Sunday Night Football in 2015, where I would think the stakes are a little higher, and you'd have to be someone like Collinsworth who can really sort of X's and O's in addition to entertain.
Yeah, but let's remember one thing. In the time that Meredith was there, it was a three-man booth.
True.
And they created a chemistry beyond the play-by-play guy, because if you also remember, the play-by-play guy changed over a number of years early on, from Jackson to Gifford.
Gifford, right?
Right.
And it became the chemistry or lack thereof, or the drama or lack thereof, between Howard Cosell and Don Meredith that really generated so much of the interest in Monday Night Football. And a lot of that was generated for a lot of reasons that we do on TV, is that it insulates you from bad games. It insulates you from having a 43-7 game, and then you let Cosell and Meredith go. Now, I worked on a show for 18 years that we had horrible hockey for a decade. And what we did was we put people on the air between periods, guys like Howie Meeker and Don Cherry, that drove ratings because we could program that. We couldn't program the game, but you could program the intermissions. Yeah, and you could create content.
Yeah, I was going to say the genius of Don Cherry, or those who put him on the air, is that even if you had a bum game, you were basically looking for Coach's Corner. You would stick around for Coach's Corner.
Totally.
That's brilliant programming.
Well, that's Ralph Mellenby.
It's the same premise that, although they generally aren't horrible games, you can have a bad NBA game on Turner, and people are going to stick around at 12:30 to hear what Charles Barkley, Kenny Smith, Shaquille O'Neal have.
And I was just going to, those are two names I was going to mention. I was going to mention Kenny, but he fits to some extent in that. But with Shaq and Barkley, I'm not watching that TBS show to find out what in-depth knowledge those two guys have.
Correct.
I'm there to be entertained, and they, generally speaking, will entertain me, either by saying something funny or something stupid. But either way, their agenda, I believe, I think both of them are smart enough that they know they're there to entertain.
Right.
Everything they say is targeted towards that.
Barkley's the sort of the rare guy where I think he, by sort of sheer personality alone, you are going to watch him. Although, I think when he watches an NBA game, he's a pretty interesting analyst. He has some, at times very interesting observations. But we are seeing in the college setup, Charles Barkley is on CBS and Turner during the NCAA tournament for one reason. It's because he's Charles Barkley.
Correct.
He's not bringing much to the table in terms of deep analysis of those teams.
He's actually, Richard, that's a good point. I think he's actually struggling.
I agree with you.
I think he's struggling in the tournament, and I think that the marquee value that he creates and to get beyond the hardcore basketball fan is not a bad idea. But I think he's struggled in the college game, unlike the NBA.
No one loves the guy more than me, and I've written this many times, but I totally agree with you. I don't want to say he's miscast, because I still think he's interesting television every time he's on. But I agree with you. This is not the easiest setup for him, because these are 12-hour days,
right?
And you kind of get exposed when you don't know, the fourth and fifth guy of a starting lineup for one of the teams early in the tournament, and it's been tough for him. I agree.
Can we go back to Republicans and Fox? Our conversation started with this.
Ted Cruz based or something else?
It started there because Bob said I couldn't be president of the United States because I'm Canadian. And I said, well, hold on now. Ted Cruz was born in Alberta. He can be president of the United States.
Ted Cruz was born in Alberta?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
I mean, Ted Cruz is not going to be president of my country. I can guarantee you this. But it is, he got a lot of attention. And it's interesting. The fascinating thing to me about politics now in the States, or one of the fascinating things, is on the Republican side, how you have to really veer right to win the primary. But then, and this is not any, deep political analysis, if you veer too far right in the primary, you can never get back to the center.
Which is where you have to be to have any chance.
They're really, it's fascinating in that the Republicans are sort of in a really tough spot, because if you're a centrist Republican, do you gamble to be a centrist and maybe not win the primary? Or do you sell out your centrist ideas, go right, win the primary, but then you can't come back because in the general election, the Democrats just pound you with what you said to get the right to vote for you in the primaries? Very hard.
Well, I think all of that's true. I just think the Republican Party is in such a mess. I mean,
I agree. Yeah.
And John has said this before, I should be a Republican. From an economic standpoint, from a lot of the things, business things that I believe in, I should be a Republican. But I hate the party and I hate the people in it so much. I could never vote Republican. I can't watch Fox.
See, that's where the conversation went, Richard.
I can't watch
the difference
Fox.
Between Fox and CNN. Okay, the difference.
Not that I always want to defend Fox, but sometimes you watch CNN, especially Don Lemon, and you literally feel like you're watching Springer at this point. So,
well, I get
I don't know
that.
What happened to CNN as well.
Yeah, and I'm not. But I never said he said CNN. John said CNN. I didn't bring CNN up.
I did.
I used to watch a lot of CNN. Now I'll only turn it on when something bad is happening, generally speaking.
Right.
I just can't bring myself to watch the Fox crap. I just can't.
Well, the one thing I will say, the genius of Fox is, I mean, the fact that they spun everybody that they're, that they were sort of middle of the road and
oh, please.
Know, decide where they are.
I mean, it's
but
not
they,
even
you know
close.
They were ahead of the curve in that they became a partisan news network and they attracted a lot of conservatives to that network who
no
felt
kidding.
Underserved by CNN. And now you've seen, obviously, I'm not saying anything anybody doesn't know, MSNBC essentially has now tried to be the equivalent, the liberal partisan network, and they're playing catch-up in terms of the ratings. So Roger Ailes, as a television person, is a genius.
Yeah.
But I'm not, you know, I don't disagree with you. There are times, the one thing that really frustrates me about Fox, and I do think they do this far more than MSNBC and CNN, is they do not traffic in reality. They traffic in over-the-top partisan pushing that's not close to reality.
Correct.
Even when MSNBC sort of goes one way, I feel like they're not outright sort of like really trying to fib you. And sometimes I do feel – and not everybody on Fox, but certain people on Fox, I just feel like that it's never really about the truth. It's about – essentially about sort of, you know, bloviating and opinion making.
Well, remember when
they're successful as heck, man? They are raking in cash.
Well, yeah, because they got a bunch of rich Republicans who love listening to all that crap. You know, they
that's, well, and Rupert's not stupid either.
He is not stupid. I agree.
No, but I don't. You know what? Look at. I don't think you create a network based. Well, maybe you do.
You give the viewer what they want to hear.
Maybe you do.
I mean, it's a genius move. You know, the interesting thing to me is, and this is what's really interesting to me, is can the quote-unquote left create the same exact network? And so far, if you look at the ratings, they can't. MSNBC's ratings are I mean, literally, I can go outside of Sixth Avenue right now and find more people sometimes than who watch MSNBC in certain parts. So that's what's interesting to me is, you know, the same thing, and this you guys would be interested in this in terms of radio. Limbaugh and Hannity have been successful for years. I mean, juggernauts in this country in terms of people who listen to them. There has never essentially been even close to the equivalent on the opposite side.
Right.
Why, you know, Maddow was a radio personality for a while on Air America. She did okay, but the numbers weren't close to what these guys do. So why is that? I'm always wondering.
Because it's easy to be negative.
Is that what it is?
It's easy. I mean, it's the same in broadcast.
Polarizing radio works better than whatever the opposite would be.
I think it's the easy way out. It's easy in sports. It's easy in any analysis to say no, and it's easy to be critical than it is to actually have in-depth analysis.
You know, it'd be interesting to know: do Fox's ratings go down if there's a Republican president?
That would be interesting. I don't know the answer to that, but I would really be curious to see how they did.
We just finished one for 8 years.
Now, when Bush was president.
Not really. That was a while ago.
Well, you know, because the thing is that you got to keep in mind then the House and Senate was Democratic controlled.
Yeah, so they could rag on them.
Bang them. In the same way, it's, you know, very easy for the Maddows of the world to kill Congress right now. So that's a good point. You know, maybe that's – I mean, I hate to say – and I rail against this, obviously, when I write about the First Take and the other nonsense of the world, but you're not wrong. You know, these TV people who create this kind of crossfire stuff are not dumb. Debate, negativity, controversy, trolling, there's always a market for it. It's kind of a bummer, but, I mean, if you live in the real world, you have to admit that there's always going to be people who want to listen to or watch people knocking people or yelling at people.
Yeah, well, we get
that. Why is that? Is that just us as humans? I can't figure it out myself.
Well, we just have too many stupid people in North America. That's the problem. We need a better education system.
I love the fact that you say that as a person who's trying to attract listeners. That is something I admire.
Well, I don't care about listeners or viewers. It's irrelevant. I'm here to amuse myself.
Richard, it goes back to the
speaking, I think that's the best radio. That's the Howard Stern philosophy.
It goes back to that.
Hopefully people will listen.
It goes back to that negative thing again, Richard. Who cares? You know, I mean, people are attracted to the naysayers.
Well, it's just going to, you know, I can't stand Fox and I can't stand their positions and I hate all Republicans or I hate what the Republican Party has become.
Rob, can I leave you at least on one upbeat note?
Please.
I doubt it, but
Sabres,
go ahead.
My God, the Sabres are doing it right.
Yeah.
Edmonton now, basically.
They've blown it.
Will not catch the Sabres. Phoenix, or Arizona, I should say, won the other night. They play tonight. So
I know.
I feel like if Arizona can pull off the victory tonight, I think it's over. I think.
Yeah, well, you get 20%.
The job will have been done.
Yeah, you get 20% instead of 15%. You might still lose them.
But, again, you get this, as we've talked about many times, you get the second pick.
Well, yeah, but.
That is a guaranteed excellent player.
He's right.
I'm not saying
McDavid
not
or
saying,
Eichel.
I'm not saying Eichel is McDavid.
I think Eichel's way below that bar.
But from everything you read, the guy is a franchise player for 10 years.
But no question. Connor's up here.
I think it's
then,
night and
then
day.
Then Jack Eichel's there, and then there's another dip below that, Bob. I mean, there is a gap between 1 and 2, but there's also a gap between 2 and 3.
At least heading in, you don't want number 3.
All right, we'll take that and file it away somewhere.
Phone the Leafs scouting staff.
We'll send it to Fox.
In the history of my sports watching, have I enjoyed a team losing as much as I've seen this year?
Is there any chance the Republican Party could finish third in the next presidential election? I guess not. No.
Well, the problem is, in this country at this point, you need a Perot-like figure to run as an independent. So you need somebody with a ridiculous amount of money.
I'm just hoping.
Bill Gates type? I think a third-party candidate could do really well if they had that kind of money, but I think my guess is in 2016, too many people fear Hillary Clinton. It'd be tough to beat her.
Well,
and so maybe you'd be back down until 2020.
I'm not sure I'm a Hillary fan, but I'm a Democrat, so go Hillary. Richard, we got to go.
Listen, I never get to talk politics, so thank you.
That was fun. Yeah, it was fun. We never talk American politics. I'm not sure we really did, but Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated, Scotty Bowman, the senior advisor to the Chicago Blackhawks, joins us next. This is Primetime on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks. No, it's not Stephen Brunson. It's John Shannon. Geez, Brunson here? Wow, what an exciting day.
He's not here yet.
Oh, yes, he is. He's just not in here.
Oh.
He's in the other room producing.
I hate when guys try to produce.
Well, how long did you try for? 20 years?
35.
John Gibbons will join us later, the Blue Jays manager. Grievous Vasquez in studio, the Raptors point guard. Masai Ujiri, the GM of the Raptors, and Colby Armstrong. Former NHL player, now with Sportsnet.
Mm.
All coming up. Here's one of our favorite people. He's a senior advisor to the Chicago Blackhawks. Here's Scotty Bowman. Mr. Bowman, how are you?
Hello, Bob. Hi, John.
Hey, Scotty.
Good.
All right. I have questions, but Shannon says he has questions, so I'm going to give him first kick here.
Okay.
I just want to know how many times you would throw the coach's challenge now that you know it's coming.
The first time I get a chance, I'd throw it.
So...
Like after the opening faceoff, game one, right?
Yeah, I wish there was more options, though. There's only a few options.
No, I know.
But you got to make sure you're right.
We're going to get two. We're going to get two. At least we're going to get two a game.
You think you're getting two?
Well, I mean, the coaches, they're not going to be happy with every call. And, I mean, you lose your – what are you going to do? You're going to lose your timeout, you know.
Yeah.
Big deal.
Yeah.
You didn't have timeouts.
No, it's a good idea, I think.
We've gotten into this conversation. One of the things that happened, of course, at the winter meetings was they didn't raise any issues about the size of goaltenders and reducing equipment and the lack of offense in the game, which is kind of a hidden story here. And we're about to have the first – this is going to be the first time, we believe, since 66-67, and you would remember this.
A year before expansion. Yeah.
That the scoring champion had less than 90 points.
Well, it was Stan Mikita, I think, 87 points, I think.
Wow.
And it's going to happen this year.
Oh, yeah.
And, well, I think it's an issue, and I'm not sure why it's not. It wasn't even discussed. Where do you stand on that? You've gone through a bunch of eras. You know, is there something wrong with scoring a lot of goals?
No, but the end zones are too big, Bob. I don't know how they don't even try to get back to what we had before. The end zones became so big with the extra 4 feet, took it out of the neutral zone, took out the center line. Now they got six goalies on the ice. You got the biggest guy is the goalie, and then you got five other guys blocking shots. And I'm not sure if the end zone was a little bit like shorter by 4 feet. I'd have a tendency to move my. The reason we don't have scoring is the offensive forwards that are in their defensive zone, like the wingers, they're as far away from the opposing net as they ever been. They never were that far before. And I just don't understand it. Why, like there before, your wingers would cover the points, and now they don't. They're not out there. They're around the dots. They're around the top of the circle. So the other team's forwards are close to them. So even when the defensive team comes up with the puck, there's no differential.
No space.
There's no space. They don't get a lead on the guys.
Right.
That's why we don't get line. I just wanted to see what it would be like. If they would 60, 60, and 60, that was the three, that's 180, mm-hmm. 10 behind the net. I'd like to see what it would be like. Would they still stay close to the net? Mm. Well, they might. And then the point shots would be at least you're 4 feet closer every time you're in there. And I don't know, you might be able to get more shots. But now, I mean, the key guys are your defensemen. Any team that doesn't have mobile defensemen that can play the point. I watch Tampa play like 80% of their home games. And I mean, they're not big name guys. Although Hedman is now, he's really improved. Hedman and they got the other guy plays with Strahlman, and they write their defense. Even some of their newer guys, Schuster and Garrison, they let them go in the corners. They chase the puck. They put a big press on you. A lot of teams don't do that. I mean, their defensemen are involved. I think Hedman's got 10 goals. Strawman's got 8 or 9. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the secret of the game today. I'm going to see Nashville tonight. They got Josi. They've got Ryan Ellis. They got Seth Jones. And they got Weber. I mean, people think, well, they're pretty good defensively. They're also very good at the other point, at the opposing point. So
well,
I think that's the game.
And that's, you
but
know
that's
what,
where
that's,
the goal scoring is coming from now.
That's Calgary's success too, Scotty,
yeah,
from
sure.
The blue line.
I mean, exactly. I mean, they don't have Giordano, but... Any of the teams, Subban, I mean, you go Doughty. These are so valuable players to their teams. Chicago's got Keith, but they don't play him behind Taves and Hossa. They seem to play Hjalmarsson and Oduya. And I don't know, I haven't talked to them about it, but Keith and Seabrook, I mean, I'd like to see those guys. But they play a tight defensive game, and they have it spread out a little bit. But I still think your defense is so much a help to your forwards in today's game. If they don't have it, you're going to have a hard time scoring. But and the goalies are, well, you know how big the goalies are.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, they're giants.
Yeah, and I mean, you had a big guy in Dryden.
Yeah.
But there was still plenty of room to shoot.
Well, he didn't have the equipment that he had.
Right.
Take the jersey. The jerseys are, I mean, they spread them out. They push as much stuff in them. The goalies, you can't do much about the pads because they cover the bottom of the net. I don't know. I'd like to talk to somebody about the glove, the catching glove. Before it was like a first baseman's glove.
Exactly.
Now they don't catch as much as they block, and they have it up top now. They don't have it down at waist high. It's up. It's covering the top of that net. And you're right, though, Bob. You don't see anything. You get these. I mean, the guy tonight, Rene's big. I mean, the other guy's 6'8", Bishop.
Yeah.
We got Darling now, 230, 6'6". It's a tough situation.
But Kenny was what, 6'4", Scotty?
Yeah, he was so much bigger than the others. Yeah, 6'4". That's right. About that.
6'4" with 32-inch pads, too, Bob.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
That's the other thing.
We know.
No, small pads.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Small. The glove and blocker point is one that's really valid.
Yeah. How do you get it down, though? Do you know what the measurement is? There is a measurement for the glove. Do you know what it is, John?
I off the top of my head, I don't, but there's a circumference number.
They went from 52 inches to 48.
Yeah.
Now, they measure from the cuff. So you figure out 48, that's 4 feet. So you go up
holy
a foot.
Cow.
And it's not really a glove anymore. It's a basket, isn't it? It really is a basket.
They block it. They don't catch.
Yeah.
They block it. But that, I don't know if that's as big an answer as the ability to get forwards back up on the point, get some room down low. The coaches are smart. They the end zone's big. We can't cover everything. We're not going to cover the points. And people say, wow, our points aren't covered. No. Because they want them to be able to be in the line of the shot. They don't want the shot to go through. That's all very good for keeping the puck out of your net. But what about on the attack? What about, like, going... I remember when they had the Russian Tarasov. I had a meeting with him once. Couldn't speak Russian. He couldn't speak English. But he wanted me... He watched our team practice. He liked it. He wanted me to take Lafleur. And as soon as we were going to get the puck in our own end, he said, tell him to skate right past the left point man, because he's a right winger. Get him skating past that point man. Drag that point man out into the neutral zone. He said, if he's like our good forwards, you're probably better off in your own end 4-on-4 without Lafleur. Let him worry about let him bring that point man right out in the neutral zone. We tried it, but we were doing pretty well the other way. So
yeah, you were doing okay.
Well, we had good defensemen. He wanted our defensemen to, as the defenseman was going to a puck, he wanted Lafleur to take off, and that was the Russian system when they played us in '72.
Oh yeah, they released in a hurry.
Remember, and our defensemen, people don't realize, if you took the statistics of the Canadian defensemen, the good ones, like there was Bill White, Stapleton,
yep,
Brad Park, Savard, Lapointe,
yep,
and you looked at their statistics in the NHL. In that 8-game series, their statistics dried up because we were so concerned they would fly a guy out of the end zone.
Yeah.
And but we still won, but, I mean, it was that tight. And No, it's a problem. I don't know how what you could do. Some people are thinking when you have a man short, you can't ice the puck. If you do, there's a... Bring it back for a fair. I mean, it's another stoppage. That's the problem.
Well, but, yeah. I mean, and the great concern I have, Scotty, and I mean, as a former coach, you may or may not want to acknowledge this, but, you know, I think it's clear. Coaches can teach defense. It's really hard to teach touch and teach offense.
Oh, yeah.
And you've got to mitigate what the coaches can do somehow. And I'd love for them to just acknowledge we need some more offense in this game. How do we do it? Let's come up with a solution.
Okay, I mean,
and I don't know what I don't know what that answer is, other than if you ignore it, it ain't going to get better.
The big end zone was supposed to create more offense.
I know, and it's reverse.
It's the reverse.
It's created play along the boards, back to the point, and you get a shot from the point.
Yeah.
If it gets through, you got a chance of scoring.
And so much of this, and as you know, Scotty, all equipment has changed so much that the players are so well protected, they're not afraid to stand in front of the puck.
Well, that's
exactly
it, too.
And the goalies, I mean, like, somebody told me about this Dubnyk guy in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And I asked the goalie the other day about him. I said, what's the transformation? He said whoever got to him, he thinks it might have been Sean Burke, but he used to play sliding by the post. He said he plays post to post now.
Yeah.
He's so big, and he's on his feet a lot, but he plays only post to post. He doesn't go past the post.
Yeah, well.
And he said pucks hit him now.
It's made a difference, whatever it is. Yeah, Scotty, we're out of time, pal. I apologize, but thank you very much, as always, and stay well. We'll talk to you soon. There's the legendary... Scotty Bowman.
You know, Devin Dubnyk, another one of those guys, he's 6'6". So if you go post to post with those pads, with the chest protector, with the glove, the blocker, you got most of it covered.
You got a chance.
Yep.
Nice to see you. Thank you, as always. We'll
always
see you soon. That's John Shannon. Grievous Vasquez, John Gibbons, next hour on Primetime.